no family policies, and we have very anything that comes into Congress, for example, that is going to help family life is generally called communist or socialist. Things like maternity leave and childcare and health care for kids and public education and all these kinds of things. So on one side of the mouth, they're talking family values, which as far as I can tell really only means that they are against abortion and gay marriage.
Right.
And then you have a society where having children is actually not supported very much at all.
Right.
You know, I mean, one quick example would be Mexico has more maternity leave than we do.
Wow.
So you don't even have to look in the so-called developed world, completely developed world, to find more family-friendly policies. So there's a disconnect between those two things.
Well, do you think this is partly why people are choosing not to have children?
I do think so. I think that more and more women are looking at their mothers, whether they were married or single mothers, and seeing that what in the women's movement, women wanted to have options. Mm-hmm. And now what we see is modern day womanhood means that you're working full time just to maintain a middle class lifestyle and raising a child on top of that. And that's not necessarily a choice. That's a mandate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not really what the women's movement was about. I mean, you remember there was nobody that was holding a sign saying throw a full time 60 plus hour a week job on top of everything I'm already doing.
Right.
So most women today who become mothers find themselves doing all the work of a 1950s housewife plus a full time inflexible job on top of it, not because they want to have it all, mm-hmm. but because they want to have a roof over their head.
Right.
And so that really is not talked about very much.
Right. So that's one huge aspect of it. But there's also this idea that, and I think for the first time in my life, I heard this word pronatalist.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, there's a heavy emphasis on, you know, we don't want abortions, I mean, in Congress and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And that having a kid is actually the ultimate in fulfillment as a woman.
Yes.
And like, for instance, do you ever worry that you're missing out on fulfillment as a woman?
I don't. It's a fair question, though. I think that someone has to really look at both sides of it and make a conscious decision. Am I missing out on some things? Well, I personally like children. I love my nieces and nephews. So, yes, I'm missing out on the first time they grab my finger or say my name or run down the stairs on Christmas morning, excited as can be.
Those special moments.
But they're just moments, and that's the thing you got to remember. And then I'm also missing out on the adult child friend.
Uh-huh. Okay. Right. When you
but,
grew up.
Right, yeah. Right. But what I found, because I interviewed about 50 people for my book, and what I found is that when I asked this question, what are you missing out? Most people, well, they'd make a joke about, you know, worrying all night or paying for braces or those kinds of things. They also would say things like what I just said, which told me that they had actually really looked at this. It was a mature decision.
And this goes back to the idea of being child-free. They're actually figuring this out.
Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, one path, saying yes to one path is always no to another.
Mm-hmm.
So when you choose to be child-free, if you like children, you might be missing out on something, but that's not a reason to do it.
Right.
You see what I mean? There may be some little thing, but you're choosing something else and saying no to this.
Right. I guess any choice we make, we're closing a whole bunch of other doors.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you make this choice, you don't make that choice. But there is, again, back to this pronatalist
thing. Yes.
I mean, there's like the media, the advertising.
Yes.
I'm always amazed this whole deal with celebrity baby bumps.
Yes.
Know, and kind of celebrating that kind of thing.
Yes. And in our society, since estimates run from $250,000 to $1 million to raise a child, children really are becoming status symbols.
Status symbols.
And so when
like
you...
Like dogs.
Yes, yes. So when you see celebrities, you know, a lot of them are having children like everybody else in our society, but it is definitely celebrated. And then you look at popular culture, and as soon as a celebrity gets married, you know, when are they going to have a baby? You look at celebrities as they're aging. Take Jennifer Aniston, for example.
Right.
You can't cross a newsstand without, when will Jen finally have a baby? Poor Jen.
Right, poor Jen.
Yeah, poor Jen. And so whether or not Jen wants to have a baby is not ever talked about. And so so then, you know, someone puts on a couple pounds and it's a baby bump, or is this baby bump, that baby bump, and it's really promoted and it makes a lot of money.
Right.
You know, it's a $1 billion industry, the babies, the diapers, and the just everything, all the paraphernalia.
Right. So that, so then the other thing that figures into this, there's a huge industry that you're talking about.
Huge.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and that that is like partly like, so the media then would want to be promoting this just for the advertising dollars?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you think about it, when you live in a capitalist society, you need new consumers.
Uh-huh.
And so where do you get new consumers?
Right.
Babies.
Right.
And so the, for that industry specifically, of course, it prenatal. But you also can see this spread throughout our culture in that right now we have the lowest birth rate that we've had since the Great Depression. It's hovering below the replacement rate.
Here in the U.S.?
Yeah. So the replacement rate is considered to be 2.1 children per woman.
Uh-huh.
Pardon me. And right now it's 1.8 and going down. And so what that means is we have a declining population. So from an economic standpoint, it does need to be looked at. How do you adapt to that in a culture where you have a shrinking population, but an economy that's dependent on a growing population?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So it, part of this is, means that we've got to sort of, if this is going to be a trend, either people have to be convinced to have babies again,
mm-hmm.
or we have to really adapt to a whole other kind of society.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, the lucky thing for us, not that we're very good at learning from our European and Asian friends, we're not good at that,
right.
but they're way ahead of us on the curve because they've been below a replacement rate for a very long time. So for example, in Germany, the birth rate is 1.3. That means you're cutting your population by half every generation.
Wow.
That's huge.
Wow.
Italy, the Catholic country, has a 1.3 birth rate. So they're not replacing either. Japan, same thing. They're not replacing. So who's going to buy your goods? Who's going to utilize your services? Those kinds of things. And it can be done. Because some countries that are ahead of us have already tried different experiments. So, for example, in one city in Italy, they did a $15,000 incentive if you had a baby.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now, knowing how much a baby costs even in Europe, that's not a lot of money. But
right.
It was the equivalent of $15,000. And what ended up happening is they emptied their coffers, paying people who were already going to have babies, and didn't get a bump in their fertility rate.
Huh.
But another city in the former East Germany, part of Germany, there's a lot of, let's say, less than attractive architecture over there left by the Soviets.
Yeah.
And so it's empty. And they're not, they have a declining population. So they've started an industry where they tear down these old apartment buildings and things from the communist era and restore the natural land. And that is an economy. But it is creative around a shrinking population. So it can be done. It's just about how you think about it. If you think you have to have more people in order to have a successful economy, you're going to keep trying to push it. But if you can look at some of these other things that other people have done and say, oh, we could still have a capitalist economy and shrink and downsize and it would be okay. So whether or not we're going to have a capitalist economy or not is another show, right?
Right.
But but that shouldn't be. We're in election year, and with the election year this year, it is my suspicion that we'll be hearing a lot about this because, of course, we can't have an election without women's reproduction being part of it. So right. Now that we have the lower birth rate and we're looking at a non-replacement rate and a shrinking population, I think we're going to be hearing not just about abortion, but birth control. And the young generation, referred to as the millennial generation, not having babies.
Right. And mm-hmm. that's definitely, in fact, some of that has been going on already, and maybe we can get into that a little bit, but I want to let listeners know you're tuned to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter. This is The Recovery Zone, and you're hearing from Karen Foster, who's written a book, No Way Baby, Exploring, Understanding, and Defending the Decision Not to Have Children. And I guess I am interested, first of all, just in the whole idea that it's declining, and yet I keep hearing things that the population is soaring, that we're over 7 billion now already, and it was just 7 billion a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and it's going to be 9 billion, possibly 12 billion. But it actually sounds like it might actually, except for there's probably countries like Ethiopia or, I don't know, India, where it's still growing like gangbusters, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the global fertility rate is under 3. It's 2.6, 2.7 globally. So we're looking at declining birth rates even in countries that you would traditionally think are having tons of babies. When a country like India modernizes and everyone goes to work, the men and the women, the birth rate goes down. So they're seeing that. This is a good way to explain it. At first, I thought, well, how is the global population going down? It's going up. You see this. If you look at the population clock online, it's going up.
Right, 80,000 people every year, yes. or every day or something, some
yes.
huge number.
So, but with decline, what this means is that, yes, there's still an influx of new people. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to still see the rate going up. But it's kind of like a train that's going uphill and mm-hmm. loses its brakes. It'll keep going up for a little while. And then it's going to start coming down.
Right.
And so we will still see our global population grow for another decade or so. But even the UN is seeing the world having a declining population over the next couple of decades.
Interesting.
So by 2050, we should be globally shrinking in our global population, which environmentally is fantastic.
Right. Well, and maybe we could talk a little about the environment. Like,
yes.
There are ways that this is actually a tremendous boon for the environment if we
yes.
could like not have so many of us.
Especially in countries like the United States, because a child here uses 5 times the resources as a child anywhere else in the world. So not having an American baby, well, I hate to say this, it's true, not having an American baby is like not having 5 somewhere else.
Wow. Oh, we mm-hmm. do have a caller.
Okay.
I want to remind listeners again, the number to call here is 503-231-8187 if you want to be part of the conversation. And who do we have? Joanne, would you like to make a comment for us?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
In the 1980s, I started getting involved in social and political problems. And one of the organizations I joined was, I think it was called Zero Population something. And I don't remember anymore what it was about, and I don't even know if it's still in existence. Anyway, I'm in my 70s now, and I've been questioning things more, any information I hear, maybe not everything. And I keep hearing off and on about that there are 5 billion or 7 billion people in the world. And I'm starting to question, how can anyone, no matter how intelligent and the technology they use, know that there are that many people in the world? I'm just wondering, who does that kind of collecting of information about population in the world? And you may not know, but anyway, I'll listen off the air.
Okay.
No, generally that would be done by the UN because each country has its own census way of doing census. And so like anything else that we look at globally, there's the raw data. And then you pull all that raw data from all these countries together, and then we'll have to make estimates for countries that don't have an infrastructure. There are a few of them out there. Like, for example, Somalia does not have data on birth rates because they don't even have a government. So you have to estimate in
right.
countries like that. But that's generally how the data is collected, and the numbers are done by the UN. And if you go online and look at the and just search World Population Clock, there's all kinds of great data on there that is actually cited, not just estimated, but cited how they came up with those numbers. And in October 2012, it was a big announcement that we had hit the 7 billion mark.
Right. Mm-hmm. It was huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And but besides that, so going back then to, I mean, when I'm hearing that, wow, you know, the birth rate's not even replaced, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still like the idea of when I was young, I think there was like really young, there were maybe 2.5 billion people. And and or maybe three, and I still remember, like, I was growing up in Southern California, and it just seemed like millions of houses were being built, and mm-hmm. you know, trees were being cut down, and right, and it seemed like there was plenty of people already.
There are. So, there are plenty of people. It's not about survival of the human race anymore.
Right. I mean, we might even want to start thinking about, well, what would be an ideal number of human beings on this planet? But that's the kind of planning we're not ready for yet.
No, but it has been talked about. You know, there's a few books out there. Was it Alan Weiss wrote A World Without Us?
Yeah.
Estimated that a billion on the planet can sustain a billion somewhat indefinitely.
In a billion might be just right.
Might be just right,
so that,
yes.
That would, like, we do the halving our population for quite a while, and we get back down there again, and
yes.
That would actually be okay.
Yes.
But as you pointed out, a lot of people, economists and whatever, are sort of insisting, and despite what's going on in Germany, there is a lot of go out and multiply. It's your duty.
Yes.
And you hear that. Like, I was reading something, it was on the American Spectator, which of course is quite conservative, but it was like, it's our duty to civilization. We're going to destroy civilization if we don't sustain this population at, I guess, 7 billion and increasing.
Absolutely. And especially in the so-called West modern world kind of thing, because we have the luxury of thinking about this stuff where people in developing countries don't.
Right.
But the birth rate going down does create some economic problems, but it's also a nationalist issue. So if people in Iran, for example, which their birth rate's actually going down quite a bit, I think it's under three now, three children per woman, it's 2 point something. But if you say, okay, well, people in Iran are having 5 babies and Americans are having 1, the fear is that then the future will belong to Iran.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the nationalism issue comes in. The global population is an environmental issue. And then when certain countries are depopulating, then it becomes a political issue.
Uh-huh.
And there aren't going to be any, if with a 1.3 birth rate in Germany, if you're cutting your population in half every generation, a couple of generations from now, you have no more Germans.
German, kaput.
Kaput. And same with all the other countries that have those really low birth rates, like China, Japan, Italy. And so the issue also becomes around religion and race. Certainly the lowest birth rates are among Anglos. But again, it's not like people of other racial backgrounds are having tons of babies anymore, right?
Right.
So I do think that even though it's, some people will come right out and talk about it, like Pat Buchanan in Death of the West talks about how, you know, there's going to be no more white people, no more Anglos, and that we should be worried about that. I don't look at it that way. I look at it as one human race.
Right.
But some people have come right out and said, this is the death of Anglo-European descent culture.
Uh-huh.
And then other people, I think it's more of a subconscious fear.
Yeah.
It's just more, they see, you know, what they think that people in all these other countries that are primarily brown or black people are having zillions of babies, and that's not necessarily true. But it scares them from a xenophobic perspective.
Right. And,
you know.
And so it's interesting that it's not just, so when you're talking civilization, you could almost put that in quotes, you know, when they're talking about being afraid of civilization collapsing.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What they generally mean is Western dominated civilization.
Right.
Because the West, United States leads it, but the West dominates the whole world right now. Not for long, but for right now. So, yes, that's a big part of it, losing that sort of, that the power. And if you don't have a population, you can't be the superpower on the planet.
Right. And to me, it's like I see that you have more kids. And as you were saying, especially in America, the basis of our economy is really based on our environment. And if we're completely trashing that, there goes the economy anyway.
Exactly. I mean, you talk about having 3 billion people when you were younger.
Yeah.
You're a baby boomer.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so being younger, and now it's 7 billion. If we kept at those the birth rates and fertility rates that we had in the 60s and 70s, we'd already have depleted the planet. because they were 6-7 children per woman. The invention of birth control has actually saved our planet. Because there was a book written called The Population Bomb that was about
Yes.
And his predictions did not come to pass, but that is because the fertility rate was cut exponentially by birth control.
Right.
And so if we had kept having babies at that rate, we would not have been able to keep up with the demand for food, water, housing, all of those things. So I firmly believe that the human race has some kind of intelligence to it, whether it's evolution or natural selection or whatever you want to call it, where we know collectively that there's enough people.
Right.
And so what you see also, which I find very interesting, is a lack of desire, a lack of drive to have
a kid.
To have children.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of research, but there's plenty of speculation that may be part of human evolution. Not to mention the fact that we have higher infertility rates than we've ever had before. And some of it you could probably tie to pollution and food additives and all of those other things that we've talked about in our culture. But a lot of it may also be human evolution saying, we've got enough.
Yeah.
We've got enough. And a lot of the people I talk to, they have no desire to have a child. It's not, I'm not going to have one because it's good for the world.
Right.
It's more, I'm not going to have one because I do not want to be a parent.
I just don't want it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was actually what my situation was the pill had come along, mm-hmm. and it was sort of like I'd grown up like everyone else, I guess, in my generation. Well, I'll grow up, I'll get married, I'll have kids. And then somewhere along the line, it occurred to me, I don't have to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I'll do it later. And then that later just kept going. And there was never the time where I really wanted. And it's interesting. That's like what you're saying is happening to more and more of us.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. A lot of women I talk to. And remember, women who have children have a muzzle on them. Meaning that they can't really talk about this kind of stuff without being seen as pariahs. So as a counselor and coach myself, I've had women come into my office and tell me, if I had this to do over again, I wouldn't do it.
Uh-huh.
But you can't say that at a cocktail party. You can't say that out with your family and not be completely chastised. So, you know, the confessional or the counselor's office is where women are going to say that. And because of what I write about, certainly I've been pulled aside at gatherings and events saying, boy, I wish I'd have known. I wish I'd have known that was a choice.
How hard it is.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Because even in my own family, I have extended family members who, when I wrote my book, told me, oh, you know, it never even occurred to me that I could not do that. It just never occurred to people my age, Gen Xers, who said, oh, it never even occurred to me not that it was a choice.
Huh.
There was still that ingrained collective. You grow up, you get married, you have children.
And this was partly because they're in those parts of the country, not, as we were talking earlier, Portland or San Francisco, where that's just assumed.
Yeah. And, you know, really, but I'm still talking about California or Oregon. So, you know.
Even California and Oregon.
It's more about a collective consciousness.
Uh-huh.
I mean, how often in, you know, someone, I'm 45, so six, someone in their childbearing years in their 20s and 30s, so we're looking back in the 90s, how often were we talking about parenting as a choice? When did anybody ever say to you, well, if you have kids, you'll understand?
Right.
They say, when you have kids, you'll understand. And that's just part of our collective culture. And I think a lot of that operates subconsciously.
Right. It's definitely not when, if. It's definitely when.
When.
Yeah.
When.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And so a lot more women now are seeing that, oh, I don't have to do this.
Right.
And of course, if the news gets out that the reality of motherhood and the bill of goods they've been sold by the media are two different things, that's a big threat to a lot of people who are both invested in the economy of making babies that we were talking about mm-hmm. a few minutes ago, and also political bases.
Right.
And, you know,
oh, right.
Their base.
And even one of the big economies is actually the in vitro fertilization economy.
Oh, yes.
like, what was that? That was several billion,
billions,
wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Billions. So in this pronatalist culture, as we were talking about, you have legislation. We can't give health care to everyone, but we'll force the insurers to cover IVF, in vitro fertilization. Well, isn't that a choice? Why won't they cover my birth control? Why, you know, all these kinds of, and it is billions of dollars. It's a lot of money. And, you know, I am torn because I've had friends who really had the desire to be a parent, mm-hmm. and would be good parents, and we need them.
Right.
You know, we need them, conscious, good parents, who struggled with infertility. And so I understand part of the idea of wanting to pay for that. I also see a society where we're not covering people's basic health care and we're spending billions of dollars on IVF, which to me is the same as if I decided that I wanted to, well, maybe not exactly the same, but if I wanted to have some other kind of elective surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And no one's going to cover that.
Right. And you know? And not wanting to cover birth control, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, this DUPAC thing. But I want to let people know again, you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter here with The Recovery Zone. I'm speaking with Karen Foster, who's written a book, No Way Baby, Exploring, Understanding, and Defending the Decision Not to Have Children. And you can call in if you like. The number here is 503-231-8187 and let us know what you think about all this. But going back to it, this idea that you decide not to have a kid, why are so many women, you're saying that maybe there's this sort of general fallout from an overpopulated planet.
Yes.
But what are some of the reasons that people were giving you that they didn't want to do it?
The most common thing was, I don't want to.
I just don't want to.
I just don't want to. But they have lots of good reasons because they're used to having to defend themselves. That's the defending part. The exploring part is, do I want to do this or not? The defending is, how do I talk to my friends, family, and loved ones who are still in that bubble of assuming fertility and having children? And they're used to having to defend themselves. So a lot of them have very well thought out answers to that. Things like, I know I wouldn't be a good parent. I work really hard in my job and I don't see an ability to cut that back and still afford to have a child.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times childless by choice, child free people hear that they're selfish.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking we're all selfish because we're all trying to pursue what we think would make the best world, the best life, and all of that. And in that respect, we're all a little selfish. But when you have someone who's spending, you know, their life savings on in vitro fertilization because they have to have a baby that looks like them, or that has to have come through their body,
right.
I mean, that's selfish too. So it's not really about people who don't have kids are selfish and those who do are giving. It's universal that we're all trying to pursue what we think is going to make us happy. But women are sold from the time they're very little girls that being a mother is the ultimate pinnacle of fulfillment.
Yes.
And it's not. Research has shown over and over again that things like depression rates, life satisfaction rates, they're actually worse for parents than non-parents. And a big part of that is a society that talks a lot, again, about family values and family life, but does not support it. We have a 60-hour work week, and you cannot raise children in your spare time and have it be successful.
We have another caller. Brian, would you like to give your comment here or ask a question?
Yeah, a couple of things. I haven't caught all of the show. Did you address adoption at all?
Not yet.
My late ex-wife and I adopted a little girl in Indonesia when I was working there. And, you know, she desperately wanted to have children, and I was rather ambivalent. And and she turned out, you know, infertile. So, you know, this was our opportunity. And I've never regretted it, but I often wonder what would have happened to my daughter had she been in stayed there, you know. And also, we made her a British citizen because of the disgusting U.S. healthcare non-system.
Yes.
So you might want to address that, too, is would you, if you adopt a child, why would you want to make it a U.S. citizen when it's going to be, unless you're really rich, unless it's because it's going to be tough for it. When we went back to Scotland, I mean, they have a a baby, wellness baby program, which in which a nurse comes for 3 months to 6 months to anybody, and you know, just checks on the general health of the child. So, you know, I'd like to hear you say something about adoption. Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. When people say, well, what if you change your mind? I say, there's always options.
Right.
You know, and I'm a big fan of adoption. I have a lot of adoption in my family. I have a sibling who's adopted. I have a nephew who's adopted. I have a lot of adoption in my family, and I'm all for it. There's a lot of kids out there who need good, conscious parents, and I'm not a believer that they have to have the same DNA.
Well, I have a friend who adopted at 55. Mm-hmm. She adopted a five-year-old.
Yes.
You know, so that's like way down the line.
Yeah, so for me, you know, if I suddenly wake up at 50 and think, whoops, there's an option. But I want to address what the caller said about the health care, because we do not invest in child care. We have, when you look at the religious right that seems to be really running the show, no matter what the numbers say of, you know, the minority that they are, they still have a lot of power and they still seem to be running the show. And when you're talking nonstop about family values and then block something like child care for children, How do you make peace with that? I mean, the program that he's talking about in Scotland, where the nurse comes for 3 months if you need it, that's called putting your money where your mouth is when it comes to family values and family support. I'm glad that he and his daughter had the opportunity to make her a British citizen, right? Because then she will have that option for the rest of her life. It's a serious, serious issue.
Right.
And I know people here in the U.S. who've adopted out of the foster care system in the U.S. And so those kids were never going to have health care any other way. And the fact that some friends I have brought in 3-4 children from foster care who've had difficult backgrounds, who've had some damage, mm-hmm. and are loving them and raising them, that's wonderful and beautiful, and we should support that. We should support that. And there's 200,000 kids in foster care right now whose parental rights have been severed, meaning they're up for adoption.
Right. And adding more kids just because you want them to look like you, when there's so many kids, you know, ready for homes.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Does seem a little bit skewed. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And you know, it's funny. I'm not a religious person, but I am a spiritual one, and I sure like the idea of the soul connection. I look at my nephew, whose birth parents were of Korean descent, and he was born here in Portland, but he was born of birth parents who are Korean descent, and I don't even see it anymore. I don't even, in fact, sometimes I forget.
Uh-huh.
And
this is
so
just your nephew.
He's just my nephew.
Yeah.
And I wish more people who were resistant to adoption could understand that.
Oh, we have Mario on the phone. Hello? Mario? I guess Mario is gone.
Hi.
Oh, there you are. Okay, great. What's your question?
I come from a family of 10 kids, and it's kind of interesting because out of 7 girls, there's only 2 of us that chose to have children. And so I think that I really applaud what you're saying and what you're feeling, and there wasn't anything horrendously wrong with our family, you know, but it's just we saw how hard it was, I think, to come from so many kids.
Were you near the top of the birth order?
I'm number 5 down.
Oh, okay. You have no children?
No, I have one. So then I very purposely, you know, we chose to only have one child.
Yes.
And that's also a discrimination.
Yes, there's another show about having one child. There's got to be, because you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
But I know that some of my sisters who chose really early not to have kids, and it's really great doing this and making it okay for people to choose something different.
Oh, thank you so much. One of the things that research shows is that older girls in the birth order are less likely to have children, and that's why I asked you, because the older girls have taken care of the younger children. They've had a little taste.
Yeah.
Well, and especially with 10.
Yeah. Well, my oldest sister, she two of them actually got sterilized really early, in their early 20s.
There you go.
And the older one, she's taken in about 6 different homeless girls, and just, like, she's had them in her life now for, like, 30 years.
Oh.
So I think out of she did parenting in a different way.
I think that us women who don't bear children, our maternal, if you will, our energy is given to society in a different way. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And if I can quote my Irish former boss on that one, no purgatory for her, straight to heaven.
Well, yeah. If I could say one more thing.
Sure.
That when I was involved with a lot of families before I got pregnant, and when I got pregnant, the families, they all kind of like knew that, oh, now you're going to go off and do your own thing. And actually, that is what happened.
It changes relationships with your friends. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes. A lot of people, especially in their 30s, will experience that because around that time, all of their friends have either had kids or are going to have kids and are at that place of making a final decision. For me, you know, I could change my mind up until my late 30s without a whole lot of repercussions. But when I got to my late 30s, it was time to look at it even deeper. I already knew I didn't want to have kids, but there's no option to change your mind. I want to go back to something the caller said that is really fascinating. She said her sister was sterilized in her early 20s.
Right.
That is not an easy thing to do if you haven't had children. So usually when a 20-something-year-old woman goes to a doctor, even in San Francisco or Portland or Seattle or the more liberal cities, the doctor is very reluctant to do it.
This is part of the pronatal thing again.
Yes. So if you would like to be sterilized early and you haven't had children, if you're 25 and you've had 3 children, it's different. But if you're 25 and you haven't had any children, you're going to have to go see a therapist. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to write a letter explaining that you know this is a permanent procedure. And what I'm thinking is that maybe that would be a good idea for potential parents. You know, I mean,
this is a permanent decision.
I would like you to go talk to a counselor about what this really means. And I would like you to write me a letter that says, you know, this is a permanent decision and that you cannot change your mind about it.
And maybe talk a little bit about why you want to do this.
Yes.
Because there are some really off the wall reasons where people do become parents. You know?
Yes. Yes. In fact, we were just looking at a list earlier, weren't we, of things like, I want to have someone to love me. Talk about selfish. Or I won't be treated as an adult until I have a child.
Right.
Well, that to a certain extent actually is true, but that's not a reason to have one. I mean, my friends and I who are childless by choice in our 40s are still, you know, on the couch at the holidays. We might as well have a seat at the kids' table.
Right.
You know, and but most of that's within family, but still, yeah, there is a little bit of that, like, when are you going to grow up?
We have another caller. John, what would you like to comment or say or ask?
Oh, well, when I was growing up, let's say like it was like 12 to 15, I had a paper route, but my mom also ran a daycare center. And sometimes she had really hard time, you know, keeping help, you know, whatever. And so I helped her out the last, you know, 2-3 hours before the parents would come in. And, boy, I was exhausted. and she says, well, this will be a good lesson. This is, if you want kids, this is it. And I said, whoa, you know. And she had told me later on in life that my last two sisters that were born, that she didn't want them. She didn't even want me. You know, this is like not on her deathbed. But I could understand, you know, like she had favoritism towards, you know, my two older brothers because she just wanted to stop. But I was asking, okay, why don't you and Dad use condoms or something? He says, only sailors and prostitutes do that.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is back in, you know, early 50s.
Sure.
Mid-50s. And I was kind of thinking about that, and I was, you know, like, you know, high school was, well, it's high school. But, you know, this is just my own opinion, that in their education system, they should incorporate, like, a community service. I'm not really advocating really strongly, but, you know, kids, I think people in high school, like sophomore to junior, or maybe up to senior, at least have one quarter, you know, like 8 weeks in a daycare center. And then after that, they graduate and go into a nursing home and you know, do community service there. So you get the extreme young and the extreme old.
I think this is excellent.
And then they know what life's about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You want it, you get it.
Well, and in a society that's focused on the nuclear family, and even the nuclear family isn't holding together so well, most kids have no idea, and I mean teenagers and young adults, what a baby is,
right?
What it needs, what it's going to be like to have. No idea until they actually have one. And then it's too late.
I just want to, we have another caller, but I want to let people know.
Well, that's all I just wanted to put in, you know, my experience, you know, and I'm childless, but I am.
You
no
are
business,
childless. Yes. You learned your lesson.
It's just that, you know, gee whiz, if, you know, you're going to have to experience it, you know.
And if the only way to experience it is when you've had done it, it's too late.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
There was actually a reality show a few years ago that tried to do this.
Yeah. Well, anyway, well, thanks for your time anyway.
Yo, you're very welcome. Thank you for your
call. Thank you so much. And I just want to let people know again, this is KBOOO. I'm Stephanie Potter with the Recovery Zone. I'm speaking with Karen Foster, who wrote a book, No Way Baby, Exploring, Understanding, and Defending the Decision Not to Have Children. And we had another caller. Garrett, what would you like to say?
I'd actually like to say that a lot of people are actually sterilized as teenagers, not even knowing what's happening, because they get taken into the system because there's some kind of major life disruption. They're understandably emotionally disturbed. But it's not necessarily a lifelong thing. It's just that their life needs to change a little bit first. And they end up getting put on these psychiatric medications, combinations of which can actually cause sterility. I've known quite a few people who cannot have kids now because they were on combinations of these medications.
Yeah, taking, you know, a lot of times people will say very idealistically, you know, you should have to have a license to have a baby or something like that. Regulating reproduction and forced sterilization is morally wrong, period, end of story. We've already been down this road. We did eugenics in the early 30s.
Well, what if it were simply you have to be able to pass a basic first aid class so that you can keep your baby alive?
You know, it sounds reasonable. And the question comes, how do you enforce that?
Right.
That's the question.
But I don't see how it's justifiable to not know how to keep a baby alive and have one in your care.
Oh, no, it's not justifiable. But what I'm asking is, how do you enforce something like that? Because when they try to enforce things like you can't have more than one child in China, what you end up with is forced abortion. So if someone doesn't want to do the test, are they going to have a forced abortion? And what does that create in terms of a societal controversy? So regulating reproduction in a free society is very difficult. And I think we're going to have to more focus on what do we do with other people's human product that they have chosen to turn their back on. How can we bring them into society and make sure that they are getting the love, nurturing care that they need more than figuring out how to stop them?
Okay, it looks like we have another caller, Robert.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to say or ask?
Well, I want to say, as far as the load on being a mother or a father goes in children today, I've noticed this thing where, like, all of my friends who have children, they're constantly chauffeuring their children around everywhere they go, and their whole lives are made up with pretty much being a chauffeur service for their child, which when I was a kid, we just played by ourselves. And just the other day, I heard that if you actually, like, say, let your kid run around with the neighbor kid and maybe take their bicycle and ride down to the river or something, that you could actually be charged with parental neglect.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I'm not sure if that's true, but I heard it on some kind of thing. And I just think being a parent today is such a load compared to what I remember being a child.
Oh, sure. We were told to go out and play and come back when the streetlights come on.
That's right. And it was fun.
Yeah.
And we liked it. And we also went berry picking and stuff like that, and, you know, went to bed at night because we were tired and woke up in the morning and had a work ethic. Now it's illegal to, you know, for kids to go out to the berry field. And at my high school reunion, the girl who was president of our class said, "What I remember was the berry picking and how much fun it was." And another kid said, "Yeah, I remember cruising and how much fun that was." I'm dating myself here. And I pointed out, yeah, both of those things are illegal now.
Right, right. And I think that a lot of this is fear. We see these high-profile cases of kid snatching and horrible, horrible things happening.
Yeah.
That was happening in the 50s, too. It just wasn't publicized the way it is now, so it's not like that has increased a huge amount. But there's a lot of fear that if you turn your back for a second, that kid is gone.
Well, we were kids and played together, you know.
Yes.
And we weren't out by ourselves wandering around the street or anything.
Right, right. I know.
Ourselves.
And this idea that if you let your kid go down to the ride his bike, that it's parental neglect. I mean, like you, I'd have to look into that to see what the validity is, but it wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't surprise me if that was actually the case in some lawsuit somewhere or in some prosecution that's what they were accused of.
Another thing that I find is that children don't really seem to respect their parents or older people that much, and I don't know quite why. But
I think this is what
see the kids bossing around their parents now.
Oh, like, yeah, that wouldn't have
never
fly.
Dreamed about doing that, and I talked to a friend of mine whose husband is a psychologist, works with children, and I said, wow, I was really talking about where the parents are like their children's slave, and he said, yeah, we hear that. I said, I would start to be a little bit upset that my whole life is spent around being my child's slave.
Yeah, I think I can sum this up in one statement. Children went from being our employees to being our employer.
Right. The bossing around thing, I think, also is turning some people off from wanting to be parents. But we do have a couple more callers I'd like to get in quickly.
Okay, thank you very much.
Before
thank
it
you.
Ends. Mimi?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
My phone might die, and I'm sorry if it does, so I'll be super quick. I don't have kids by choice due to the environment. I'm 50 now, but I've known since I was 15 that the environment was really going downhill. And it's even more so now, and it really is more so now. It's not, you know, pretend. Mm-hmm. And people tell me who have kids, oh, but if you had a kid, you know, this is the thing you're going to love more than anything else in the world. And I heard that. I heard that when I was little, you know, a teenager. And I thought, well, why would you bring somebody into this world knowing that they're not going to have, first of all, you know, whales, trees, dolphins, you name it, air mm-hmm. to breathe, and major heat, and put them through that if that's the thing that you're going to love more than anything else in the world when you know better. So that's what I wanted to add to the discussion, that environmentally, and this isn't about population, I mean, it's part of it, but mostly it's about knowing that the environment is really bad, and how can you bring this thing in that you're going to love more than anything and put them through that?
Yeah,
I'm
going to
hang up and listen on the other end.
Okay,
thanks.
Because I think
thank
that
you.
She makes an excellent point here, which is that the environment, what kind of world are we leaving this next generation? So the pronatalism and all that, you got to have a baby and it's the best thing that'll ever happen to you and all of that is part of the discussion. And then you take it into this broader realm of, gosh, you know, what kind of world are we leaving for this next generation? And why would you bring a child in? And I have some friends who are grandparents now who are struggling with this. They're glad that their daughters had a child because they're a grandparent. But they're also wondering what the future is going to look like for that little being.
Right.
You know, what's going to happen when those glaciers fall into the sea and the sea levels go up 20 feet and, you know, we're all underwater? That's going to, and you know, that's going to cause
it's
major cultural disruption.
And that adds, as we say, another tick to the, oh, I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we've got two more callers again. And who's this? Gordon. Just ask a question fairly quickly, okay?
So here I am, you know, out in the woods, having a good time, getting ready to go out to Central America, play and have a good time down in Central America. And I didn't want any kids. I wanted to have a good time. I'm 32 years old, and I meet a woman. She aggravates me wholeheartedly, and all of a sudden, boom, we're together. And she calls me 2 weeks later on a one-night stand, and we've got a beautiful girl. And we decide, number one, I've never had a father to gauge how to be a father, and so here I am. I don't want to bring a child into this world. It's corrupt. It's dangerous. It's falling apart environmentally. Blah blah blah. But I didn't. And in my belief, I don't believe that I choose a child. I believe the spirits or the child chooses you to come into this place for a bigger purpose. But with that said, it is one of the best things that have happened to me, but it also is one of the one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. But it is allowing me to be a father I never had. It is allowing me to be a friend I never, I don't have that I wish to have. So I'm creating these people. I'm creating this friend, and through them, I'm creating the future that I wish to see, because I won't be around for the future that I wish to see, because it's going to take a long time. Especially with the chemtrails, I don't think we have a long time here. I think with the governments and the UN spraying these aerosols out on us every day, I think we're in a no-go-back situation. But what I wanted to clear up is, after I had these children, I started doing research and finding that the genetically modified organisms from Monsanto are actually sterilizing children, and I started going out with a girl who was sterilized because her father made her spray Roundup every day because he had a landscaping company. At 22 years old, she became sterile.
We're gonna cut you off here, and let's just get an answer to this, because we're really running out of time.
First, I just want to say yay for you for being there and being present for your child.
That's right.
The first thing I want to say, first and foremost. And also, I agree with you. Sometimes we choose not to have children and the universe has another plan. So there you go.
Right.
That being, if they chose you, they made a good choice. And so the chemical stuff too, you know, obviously that's a whole nother hour, right? And Monsanto and all the problems that are caused by those poisons, and that's also definitely affecting fertility. Definitely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Crashing down.
Yes.
One last call, and then we're going to wrap it up with calls and just end this. But anyway, David, what would you like to ask?
I don't have a question. I just have a comment that in terms of infertility, a major cause of infertility right now is wireless technology. People putting their cell phones in their pockets. Now it's confirmed, it's irrefutable. There's 12 international studies that show sperm damage from that. Women's ovaries are damaged as well, laptops on the lap. It's a huge source of radiation that unfortunately we don't hear enough about because the telecoms own all the media.
Right.
So anyway, I have a website if people are interested in more information on that. If you follow graphs of exposure to wireless technology and the graphs of infertility and autism, you'll see that the graphs run the same pattern.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to do it justice in the time we have left, but I will say, if you want to have babies, keep the technology away from the goods.
or not get cancer.
That is something about it. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, like, websites or stuff that people could go to find out more about. For instance, you have a website. There's something called No Kidding.
No Kidding is an international social organization. There is a chapter in Portland that's not very active. Some of the chapters in other cities are very active. I think that in Portland, a lot of times people without kids are actually finding community elsewhere because there's higher numbers.
You don't need it so much.
You don't need it as much if you're in a place like the South or the Midwest where you can't even come out. And it is coming out to a certain extent in some places as being childless by choice.
Uh-huh.
Those kinds of communities can help. So
nokidding.net,
I believe.
Nokidding.net.
Yes, and then when you go online, what you see is the people who are most anti-kid can rant online, but most of us are not anti-child.
Right.
And it's fine. The ones who are safer online to rant about it, and good for them, and they shouldn't have kids.
Right.
And then the rest of us, you know, we all want to be part of the society, and it's going to require some kids if we're going to continue to have a human race. And so I really think we need to be looking at, as a society, what we mean by family values, protecting the planet for the next generation, putting our money where our mouth is when it comes to family life, maternity leave, healthcare for kids,
schools,
wages,
right.
All these sorts of things that the family values crowd likes to call communist, we desperately need in order to really do these kids and the next generation justice.
But we also need things birth control should
yes.
be permitted. I think there was something where the Stupak Amendment just
yes.
totally ended that. And it didn't totally end it.
It didn't make it through.
Yeah.
But he was a Democrat.
Right.
So if you think that the Democrats are going to, you know, keep us pro-choice and pro birth control access and all of that, there's some in there who will go with the other side. So you really have to watch them.
Right. And just watching out for all of it in all the different directions.
Yes.
And then your website itself, what's that?
KarenFoster.net.
KarenFoster.net.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to find out more, there's Karen's website, which is, it's a fountain of information.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things about this. And Karen, finally then, would you just have any last thoughts to leave with us?
I would just say again that making a conscious decision about parenting, knowing all the facts, is the direction that we need to go. And if people know the facts and decide not to have kids, maybe we need to look at the facts and how they need to be changed to create a society where having a child is a choice, and that those who choose it are supported, and those who do not choose it
are also
supported. Yes.
Right. I think that's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, Karen, I want to thank you for being on the show. I've been speaking with Karen Foster, author of a book, No Way Baby, exploring, understanding, and defending the decision not to have children. You're tuned to The Recovery Zone on KBOO Portland. I'm Stephanie Potter, and thanks to Tammy for her engineering, and thanks all of you for listening.
It's just about noon. You are tuned to KBOO. Coming right up, Jazz Lives. It looks like they have live music lined up for you today. First, though, we go to the noon news headlines.
This is KBOO Headline News at noon for Wednesday, February 26, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm Patrick Wilson. In local news, Medford prosecutor David Hopp announced his bid Monday for Jackson County Circuit Court judge. He says his years of prosecuting child abuse, domestic violence, adult sexual assault, and other crimes provides important background for hearing these kinds of cases. Hopp says he will focus on improving the courtroom experience for children and expediting cases where underage victims are called to testify.
Oregon's campaign finance and business registration websites are up and running again, 3 weeks after a shutdown, which followed a security breach. Secretary of State Kate Brown says she is extending deadlines for political action committees that couldn't file during the time the website was down. The Federal Bureau of Investigation looked into the security breach, but no details have been released.
In national news, given the court mandate in California to manage the prison overcrowding crisis, Governor Jerry Brown has released nearly 1,400 prisoners who are serving life sentences for serious crimes. These prisoners are recommended by prison boards because they have records reflecting good conduct and history of prison volunteer work. Prisoners with life sentences represent over a quarter of the prison population and have grown from 9,000 to 35,000 inmates in the last two decades.
The initiative to repeal California's landmark School Success and Opportunity Act has failed to qualify for a Prop 8-style voter referendum in November. The act requires California schools to respect the gender identity of all students and allow transgender students equal access to all school activities and facilities. The law is focused on helping these students do well in school and to graduate.
President Obama invited his political rival, Republican Speaker of the House John Boehner, to a rare one-on-one meeting earlier this week. The two met privately in the Oval Office Tuesday. Both sides said little about what was discussed beyond noting that the conversation included a range of issues.
New Jersey senior Democrats are vowing to pass stricter gun control laws, which may cause a battle with Governor Christie. The New Jersey Democratic Senate President Stephen Sweeney supports reducing the ammunition capacity of gun magazines to 10 rounds from the current 15. Limiting the barrage of bullets a shooter can spray at one time saved 11 lives when Adam Lanza had to stop to reload at the Newton, Massachusetts shooting.
A deal recently announced between Comcast and Netflix will have Netflix pay Comcast for a direct connection to their network. This will give customers an uninterrupted viewing experience when streaming movies and TV shows on the cable service. Customers have experienced deteriorating network service because of the dramatic increase in network requirements over the last 4 years.
In international news, a massacre of schoolchildren in Nigeria by suspected Boko Haram Islamist Tuesday resulted in 43 deaths. The name Boko Haram means Western education is forbidden. The attackers reportedly hurled explosives into student residential buildings, sprayed gunfire into rooms, and hacked a number of students to death. Only male students were targeted, with the female students being spared. This group has been blamed for waves of school attacks, especially in Yobe, where scores of students have been slaughtered in the last year.
One day after Uganda's president, Yoweri Museveni, signed a bill toughening penalties for gays, a Uganda tabloid published a list naming the country's top 200 homosexuals. The list was presented under the headline Exposed, creating concern of a pending witch hunt against gay people. Uganda is a very conservative country where most people oppose homosexuality.
This is Diane Erickson
and Patrick Wilson
with the KBOO News at Noon, produced by volunteers in our Southeast studio in Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 o'clock for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM in Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM in Philomath and Corvallis, and of course around the world at kboo.fm. It's time for Jazz Lives, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Redirect Guide, committed to promoting progressive regional businesses based upon the values of sustainability, localism, and social justice. Complete business directory and resource guide at redirectguide.com. All right, it's time for Jazz Lives with yours truly, Nick Geffro. Happy to be here every Wednesday from noon to 2. And of course, jazz continues to 4 o'clock today with Jazz in the Afternoon with Bob Riddle. And we have some live music. The Barra Brown Quintet will be performing here as soon as we get it all together. And there's some fine musicians in that band, let me tell you. So stick around. In the meantime, check this out.